Hey Star Wars fans, this is Alex from Imperial Entanglements, here to remind you that this is the place where you want to be for Star Wars content.
That is true, Alex, and just to prove it, here is my best Gamorrean guard imitation. maybe not.
That's funny.
And we're here to tell you,
if you like Star Wars, and I think you do,
are you itching for new Star Wars content?
Join us. It is your destiny.
And we're here to remind you that you're listening to
The Scariff Podcast, a Star Wars podcast with a lemony twist.
He's not wrong.
So grab your sunscreen and your blasters, because it's always sunny on Scariff.
How freaking cool is that?
Insert sound effect here.
Roll it again.
And that's the Scuttlebutt.
This podcast is a member of the Red 5 Network. For more Red 5 Network podcasts and content creators, visit bio.link/red5.
Hello?
Hi, this is Sean from Extra Star Wars.
Oh.
And you're listening to the Scariff Scuttlebutt.
All right, Scuttlebutt Nation, this is Ro from the Scariff Scuttlebutt Podcast, and we got another episode for you. Thank you for stopping by and checking us out. As you know, we are part of the Red 5 Network, and if you want to be amazed and I forgot what the next word I was going to say. I looked up and I saw somebody posted something and I was about to read that. If you want to be amazed at the wonderful list of Red 5 podcasts and content creators, head on over to bio.link/red5 and I'm sure there'll be a podcast or a content creator for you. Deep dives, movie reviews, discussions, check us out on YouTube and wherever you get your other favorite podcasts. But in the meantime, we are going to be talking about some Star Wars technology, some technology that maybe frustrates a couple of fans, but some really cool technology that defies explanation because hashtag it's science. But it's so funny because there's a lot of technology in science fiction and fantasy, and Star Wars is no stranger to the fantastical technology there. To regale us with his takes on some Star Wars technology, we've got DJ straight from the exegesis. How's it going, DJ?
It's a fantastic evening, man. I tell you, when you first brought up this topic, I was like, ooh, man, all right, now what do I talk about? And the more I thought about it, the more the list grew.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm excited. I'm excited.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm going to ask you a couple of questions. One of them is related to our main topic for tonight, but it's always amazing to get feedback from our followers on Twitter. And a couple of weeks ago, we did an episode on Star Wars coffee books, mm-hmm. and that actually came straight from the mind of one of our followers. And that's one of the reasons I love posting questions of the day and things like that on Twitter, because we get some really great responses and we get some really good interaction. But I had posted a while ago a question of the day. What are your thoughts on the redemption of bad guys in movies? And, I always think about the episode where Brad and I talked about this topic. And I think to this day is still our most downloaded episode. For some reason, people really really gravitated towards that. And I think it's because, people really like antagonists in movies. They really like bad guys. Obviously in Star Wars, we've got a whole bunch of really awesome bad guys and in, science fiction in general. Who's your favorite bad guy in any movies, DJ?
Ooh, favorite bad guys. Well, stick with Star Wars. My favorite bad guy, Emperor Palpatine, is by far my favorite. As soon as I saw him in Return of the Jedi, and I was just a young lad, what, eight, I guess, when that came out, and saw him in the theater and was just like, this guy is cool as a cucumber. Yeah, he's bad, but he doesn't get angry. He lets everybody do the dirty work, and he's just sitting back enjoying the ride. And yeah, there's just something about his character that I was like, I want to know more about this guy. What makes him tick? And so I loved him. Oh, man. Hans Gruber from Die Hard. Yeah.
Everybody's favorite Christmas movie.
Yes. And I don't know if it was just his Alan Rickman's voice that, yeah, but it just, I was like, wow, all right. So what, really didn't get an idea of what he was doing other than just being a bad guy.
Right.
And so, yeah, I loved it. So things like that. John Malkovich in The Line of Fire, another powerful performance. Kevin Spacey in Seven. Yes. Another one, I love bad guys that just have this presence about them.
Yes, absolutely. You mentioned Hans Gruber, and I think, you know, his voice definitely has something to do with it. As a young kid, when I was watching Star Wars for the first time, it didn't escape me that all the bad guys sounded British. Mm. And I think, you know, growing up, we see a lot of movies from the UK and a lot of projects. You know, you've got Doctor Who, you've got all these other, you know, movies and shows. But for some reason, like in my head, in my 7-8-year-old head, I always thought it was interesting that all the bad guys were British for some reason. Mm-hmm. And obviously, this was before my understanding that all of that footage was shot in the UK. And by default, the bad guys had to be British because those were the actors that they used. So it's kind of funny. But absolutely, I think there's a certain gravitas to the English accent. Mm-hmm. I think if you hear anyone speak, with that very particular English accent, it always sounds cool. Our friends over at Clone Army Radio, mm-hmm, Charlie is a friend of ours. She is British, and she recently she was on on their show a little bit ago, and she said the word fart in a British accent, and I thought that was pretty damn cool.
Yeah, it's it almost doesn't matter what they say. It's an air of sophistication.
Yes.
And it definitely brings a different aspect to that character.
Yeah, absolutely. So, we love the bad guys. We love the British accents. Our follower, Dylan Pegram. I know I'm butchering them, but director Dylan on Twitter says, I think it is a case by case basis. For example, I think we should believe anyone can be redeemed, but not all will be. Killmonger was a great villain who was better as such and did not need to change sides. In Star Wars, this would be like when characters come back to the light. So that's interesting. Killmonger, obviously, from Black Panther. So that's an interesting take there. And I think, you know, I've heard people say that villains like Killmonger are bad guys, I guess, to a certain aspect of the audience. But he didn't, in the story, he didn't feel like he was a bad guy. He felt like he was being justified in doing what he was doing. And I think a lot of bad guys kind of are in that same boat. You know, you don't think you're a bad guy. You've got some goals. You've got some motivations that you feel are what is needed to be done. And I think that's an interesting take. What do you think of that take?
I could see that. And and as he was reading that, I went to another aspect of it, almost as and I can't remember the word, devil's advocate. Right. And my first thought was Batman. Batman operates outside the law. Yes, he turns people over to the authorities, but his, the way that, especially in the comics, the way that he goes about doing it is dark and gritty and dirty. And he just doesn't care. He gets the job done. Now, he has certain lines that he doesn't cross, but in some people's opinions, that could make him a bad guy as well. So, it's really interesting. Even the redemption arcs, I mean, it's not everyone really needs one.
Right, right. So our friend Andrew Haley says, I'm receptive to the idea if it's thoughtfully implemented and enhances the narrative. However, if it's solely for expediency, it might disrupt the story's flow and it would take me out of the movie. I guess a quick redemption isn't as earned. And I think, when you follow a narrative, I think when a bad guy, goes through a certain, character arc and comes back to a place where perhaps the redemption is earned, I think audiences might, accept that a little better than if it was a quick redemption. Same thing with Ambrose's Geeky, our friend Ambrose.
Oh, yeah.
He says it's a mixed bag. If it's done right, it makes for a good story. But most of the time it's done poorly or retroactively. And I'm not familiar with, like Disney has done with Captain Hook and Cruella. That never works. And I think with the whole Cruella thing, I think back in the day, I remember the controversy. They were talking about how Cruella is, they made her not into a bad guy, but now she's a misunderstood character. Mm. And I think Brad and I in that old episode of our show, we did talk a little bit about the misunderstood bad guy where, sometimes I think it's okay to have a bad guy just be a bad guy and not be either misunderstood or a redemption. Not everyone needs to be redeemed. But what do you think of that?
Yeah, I completely agree. Not everyone has a redemption story, at least that we see. A lot of times we'll catch movies and we'll see the bad guy just being a bad guy. So for me to be redeemed, you have to show some sort of good, fall away to the bad, and then come back. To me, that's the redemptive arc there. When in Star Wars, take Darth Vader, we are told that, yeah, he was a pilot. He was a Jedi, once a Jedi Knight, fought in the Clone Wars. Obi-Wan said from a certain point of view, Darth Vader actually killed him. And as we grow to find out that, all right, so we started off with the good side. He fell away, and yet Luke still feels that there's good in him. So there's your redemption arc. Sometimes you just get, hey, this is the bad guy. The movie ends and he's still a bad guy. We don't need to go and delve too far into the backstory and say, oh, well, he was once good. Let's see how he can turn back good. If it's written well, sure, great. If it's not, it's not that big of a deal.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. But definitely we love our bad guys. Palpatine's a good one. Mine, obviously, everyone knows, especially when I do a little Scarif Live. You've got Darth Vader breathing down my neck behind me. No pun intended. But I find Darth Vader and I find bad guys fascinating to me. I think, it's weird being in the news business. I see a lot of bad guys. Mm-hmm. I see the results of the actions of a lot of bad guys. And I think it kind of intrigues me to know that humanity has a weird switch. I guess, speaking in the real world, humanity has a weird little switch where, anything can trigger you. And on the turn of a dime, we can turn into, a bad guy, which is it's frightening, but it's also fascinating at the same time. But enough of the bad guys, because I feel like I'm bringing down the room. Let's talk some Star Wars technology. I had had posed this question regarding Star Wars technology, and we all love some really cool sci-fi tech. But a certain aspect of Star Wars technology, sometimes, to me, I look at it, I'm like, wow, that's really cool. But does it really make sense? Or is it frustrating to not know how particular piece of technology works? And, you know, we always get that comparison between Star Wars and Star Trek. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of people say that Star Trek is a little bit more, you know, science fiction. It's a little more, dives a little more into the reality of science, where Star Wars is a little more fantasy. For the most part, I tend to agree with that. I'm going to ask you a question regarding that later, but we made up a short list about Star Wars technology that I'd like to talk to you about. But you also submitted a nice little list yourself. I'm going to start with you. You first on your list, you've got inaccurate blasters. And that is one that really bugs the hell out of me, too. And namely, obviously, because one of the things that Star Wars is good at is kind of, bringing stuff, you know, tongue in cheek into the canon of Star Wars, where maybe, you know, early on in the inception of Star Wars, it was more meant kind of like a behind the scenes thing or a narrative thing. You know, when we first hear about Imperial Stormtroopers, Obi-Wan Kenobi tells us that they're pretty good. They're mm-hmm. pretty good marksmen. And then all of a sudden, you know, Stormtroopers can't hit anything. So which one is it? But you have inaccurate blasters on your list. Talk a little bit about that.
That was exactly the same quote that I thought of was only Imperial Stormtroopers are this precise. And yet you don't see them hitting anything really of value on the first go. I was like, why in the world is it now this big joke that Stormtroopers can't hit the broadside of a barn, but yet they're so precise. Mm-hmm. They are military trained. So right. is it the blasters that are off? Is it their aim off? Is it their helmets, which have reportedly have guidance systems in their tracking systems to help them aim? So something is off somewhere, and it's never really explained. Why the terrible accuracy? I don't get it.
Yeah, that's one of the aspects of that particular little in joke that kind of bothers me. And I think they kind of explained it a little bit in The Mandalorian when the two biker scouts were shooting at an empty can on the side of the road there. They were talking about how the weapons weren't really aligned or something was going on. But, you know, they were shaking the blasters, and you can tell like there were parts that were like not, secured on there correctly. So they kind of like took care of that. But yeah, you know, up until that point, obviously it bothered me because you're right. They're military trained. They are, they're supposed to be, whenever a stormtrooper shows up, there's always fear in the galaxy and all that stuff. So yeah, that always bugged the hell out of me. Another one of my list regarding Star Wars technology is repulsor lifts, like anti-gravity type of technology. Mm-hmm. And you know, you see it. Let's see, Boba Fett is carrying a frozen in carbonite slab of Han Solo on Cloud City. And there's, you know, it's just kind of like floating. Obviously, you've got the land speeders that are floating. There's no wheels, nothing underneath. What else? You've got speeder bikes that are floating, mm-hmm. Which, you know, I think the concept is really cool. And as a kid, I was always trying to figure that one out. And I think the only thing that I can come up with really is some sort of magnetism or anti-magnetism or something. What do you think about repulsor lifts? How are they on your scale?
So, yeah, I have that on my list as well. And I just labeled it speeder bikes. Just because, I mean, I've always wanted Luke's land speeder. Always wanted one. In fact, I there was even a, we call it, back in the 80s, they had those big wheels. And they had a, and I think it was an aftermarket little thing you could put over it. So it looked like you were actually pedaling around on a land speeder. And so I was like, oh, that's the coolest thing. I want one of those. And as I grew up, I'm like, well, how in the world does that thing work? I know we have gravity trains or not gravity trains, magnetic trains now, high speed trains that use magnets to push them along. But it's never really explained. They even when they're turned off, they're still hovering. So that to me would be a magnetism thing. But what magnetism? They're out in the desert. So what are they using? You know, there's no rails built under. So, it's never really explained. And it just frustrates the hell out of me because I want that technology now. And we still can't do that. I look at Back to the Future, the hoverboards.
Right.
Yeah, those don't work. So, you know, come on, make with this. Let's go. I want one. So
absolutely. And I think science fiction, you know, we're able to be inspired by stuff like that. And I'm hoping that, you know, a 7-year old who happens to be watching a Star Wars with his dad or mom in the very near future might get a spark of inspiration and then figure something out, because that would be incredible, wouldn't it?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
And you're right. Even when the device is turned off, it's still hovering there. No tracks, no metal of any kind. So I think repulsor lifts are definitely on the list for questionable Star Wars technology. But even questionable Star Wars technology is still pretty kick-ass.
Absolutely.
Okay, folks, it's time to tell you about our patrons, wonderful people that support the Scare Scuttlebutt podcast through our Patreon page. First up, we got Nicholas Schaefer. You may know him by his professional name, Backyard TARDIS. Don't forget, he's got a YouTube channel, Adventures in Locksmithing. If you think rekeying is all he does, well, head on over to his channel and prepare for the fun. And we can't forget our executors here, Scott and Kim of the Used and Abused podcast, along with Nicole. Peace, love, and fandoms. Join this Red 5 pod in the chat whenever they go live for fun and shenanigans. Take the jump to hyperspace to our Garrison tier. Big thanks to The Frank, longtime supporter and resident Back to the Future expert. Why don't you log in and say hello? What's up, Frank? And we've got Melanie Marquita. I love saying her name.
Melanie Marquita.
Big hugs to you, my friend. One of my favorite collaborators. All right, we got comics and cosmetics. Danny, licensed super nerd. Her YouTube channel's got the latest nerd news and some incredibly well-researched tidbits on comics and cosmetics. Go give her a sub. Big shout out to Alex the Salty Nerd himself. Big thanks. And someone who brings joy to my timeline, Belinda. So glad you're on our list. A heartfelt thanks to my friend Greg at Rebel Base Card. So much card knowledge. Go give him a follow. I also want to say thanks to some of our other special followers like Vader Rapina and Rennie. And of course, I'd like to think that this follower was the show's first follower, Ali K and family. Thank you guys for your support. Big thanks to all our patrons and friends of the podcast. If you're interested in helping to keep us going strong around here and get some exclusive Scarif swag and content, head on over to patreon.com/scarifscuttlebutt. Remember, we can't have the scuttle without the butt.
Hey everybody, this is Steve from Rebel Rock Radio, and you are listening to the Scarif Scuttlebutt podcast.
All right, the next one on your list, which is kind of on my list too, but mine was a little bit more specific, but you had lightsabers on yours. And again, Lightsabers are probably one of fiction's most iconic weapons slash effect slash, you know, prop, whatever you want to call it. Lightsabers are probably the most infamous pieces of technology in fiction ever. So talk a little bit about lightsabers.
Yeah, I've always tried to figure out how in the world you would make one. It's a beam of light. So light travels on unless it's down to a focal point. And if it's at a focal point, how many different focal points are there to create this beam that's just not small? And then I was thinking, well, like light, unless it bends to come back down to make like a tube, you know, it's like, all right, so what makes it drop back in that? And I think I'm thinking of like those halogen lights that are curved, right? So what could make it go up and curve back down into the receptacle? And I couldn't ever figure it out. And it's just like, well, all right. Even if it was such high beam that it gives off light, how does it block? How do they block each other?
And yeah, because it's light, right?
Yeah. I'm like, okay, well, want to figure this out, but it's not really adding up here. And then I saw a video, and I believe it was 2 weeks ago that I saw this video. And there was a guy, and they were fencing back and forth with lightsabers. And the guy goes to block, and he turns it off right at the last second as the blades were supposed to go. And then he has this hilt pointed at somebody, and he turns it back on, and it would go right through him. I'm like, why didn't they do that in the movies? All right. Yeah, it's a sword. They're fighting back and forth. But who's to say you can't just turn it off, point it at the person, turn it back on while they're in mid-swing? You don't have to block. They turn off and on. So I was like, oh, wow. All right. That's a different wrinkle. So it's another one of those things that when I saw it, I wanted one. And why can't we have one yet? And dang it, just hurry up and figure it out, because – Well, that'd probably get me in trouble if I had an actual lightsaber.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So Popular Mechanics had a video a couple of months ago of an individual that actually created his own lightsaber. And they demonstrated it. And I think, you know, you talk about the fact that it's light. But what else can it be other than just light? I think, some people have said, it's plasma. And I think that might go along the line of thinking of, you know, when Qui-Gon kind of shoves his lightsaber into the door and it starts to melt. So that that is definitely kind of believable, I guess. But there's a video under Hacksmith Industries, a retractable blade lightsaber, and it's basically a 4,000-degree plasma proto lightsaber hilt that actually has a beam of light. And again, from the looks of this video, it's not actual light, but it's plasma that is measured, retracted, extended, etc. But it's amazing, like I said, you know, how much of this science fiction technology is being worked on, just by regular people and fans of the franchise. I think, Star Trek obviously has done the same thing with inspiring, you know, scientists and pilots and astronauts, et cetera. Mm-hmm. That's another reason I love science fiction for sure.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And, as related to your lightsaber, your list that has lightsabers on it, mine was helicopter lightsabers, which I have a feeling we might see those in live action sometime pretty soon. But we'll see how the fans react to live action helicopters. And that'll probably destroy the internet more so than bricks and screws did.
Very well could.
You know, and I think a case can be made for live action helicopter lightsabers. I mean, it's just a spinning hilt. And I feel like the hovering or the distance jumping might just be, you know, a self force push. What do you think?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's what I was just thinking, that it's I think once you get it spinning, you can use the force to do, you know, they are highly trained force sensitive beings. You get it spinning and you can continue it spinning and take it wherever you want to.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. So that's worked out pretty well. We thought of it right now. That's good. So I'm going to play some messages and we will continue this discussion on frustrating Star Wars technology. We both have a list. Let's check out some more of that stuff right after this.
We have an incoming transmission from the Scarif Scuttlebutt Hotline, Commander, and we can't withstand a voicemail of this magnitude.
Hey, Ro, it's Brown Leader from Hyperspace Heroes, and responding to your tweet about coffee table books. And I have one. It is The Art of the Mandalorian Season 1, and it is definitely a prized possession for me because, one, it was a gift from a friend that helped me get into podcasting, and, two, it's about Mando, Mandalorian, which I am a Mando stan, self-admittedly, and that is the show that launched live-action content on Disney Plus and everything that came from it. That has given us lots to talk about. And I'm just a sucker for the art of Star Wars anything anyway. From Ralph McQuarrie to Doug Chang to the rest of the modern artists. Love the art of. So there you go. And that's the Scuttlebutt.
Hey, Star Wars fans and friends of the podcast. Don't forget to leave the guys a voicemail for a chance to be included in the discussion. Let them know what's on your mind. Call 773-234-8659. And that's the Scuttlebutt.
Hey, what's up, Chicago friends? If you are in the Andersonville area and want to check out a really cool comic book shop, head on over to Alley Cat Comics, 5304 North Clark Street in Chicago. If you're into comics, gaming, and all the cool stuff,
Alley Cat Comics is the place to be.
Gotta love Celine and the rest of the gang over at Alley Cat Comics. Pick up your gaming supplies, set aside your comic books, grab the latest Star Wars and Marvel books, or give them a call at 773-907-3404.
And tell them the scare Scuttlebutt Podcast sent you.
Oh, yeah.
Alley Cat Comics in Chicago. It's where the cool cats hang. See what I did there?
Hey, what's going on? This is CJ from The Rundown, and you're listening to the Scarif Podcast. And that's the Scuttlebutt.
Okay, guys, thank you for sticking with us here. I am sitting here with DJ. We're talking about Star Wars technology that that frustrates us. You know, Star Wars technology is pretty cool. We nobody has said anything, contrary to that. But there is some items on our list that will have us scratching our heads. But next on your list, and I want to hear your explanation of this, is communications in Star Wars. What did you mean by that? I think I might have an idea, but talk a little bit about that.
So in Star Wars, every time that we see a message come through, it's always a hologram, and it's normally not the best quality. It really looks like it was something that was done in the 70s. Even now, in the sequel trilogy, the prequels, anything that's done with communication, it looks like it was done on a Nokia 2 phone. And just, I don't quite understand. Whereas like Star Trek, they hail a different starship that is a certain distance away. It comes across on the screen. It's clear. You can see the other people out there. You can get their message, see them, relay information back and forth. Phasers go, whatever. I'm not really a Star Trek person. I've seen only a handful. But
they have Star Trek has better Wi-Fi.
I guess. I don't know. I mean, communication disruption can only mean one thing. But
invasion.
There's not always an invasion going on everywhere.
Right. It could just be that your router just needs to be reset.
I guess it's frustrating as hell. It really is. I'm like, come on, just
tweak that VPN. Just tweak it a little bit. But absolutely, I think I also have holograms on my list. And the only thing that I will say though, it looks pretty damn cool. You know, you have a communication hologram. You've got like one of those pucks in your hand. And you're talking to the Jedi Council, and it's flickering and all this stuff. You know, it definitely looks pretty cool. I'll give them that. But yeah, absolutely, it's a little frustrating when your hologram communicator doesn't hook up correctly. I mean, absolutely,
you have a lightsaber. You have this thing that can go out. You have these hover bikes that can do things. You have all these droids that can do, you know, that are artificial intelligent, but you can't get your communications right. I mean, I guess priorities. Well, priorities. It's on the list. We'll just get to it later.
Exactly. It's too funny. And, you know, the other thing that I've heard people complain about, and, you know, Star Trek has – you know, we talk about Star Trek Voyager, where the ship is has been flung into the Delta Quadrant, and they have to come back to the Alpha Quadrant. It's going to take them years and years and years because they're very far away. And it takes a ship some extra time to get back home from far off. But one of the things that I know some of our Twitter friends complained about is hyperspace travel in Star Wars. I think we saw a little controversial hyperspace traveling. I think in The Rise of Skywalker, what do they call it? Hyperspace jumping. Where they were instantaneously, you know, brought to different systems that were presumably very far away, but they traveled there in seconds. And I think that is one aspect of the Star Trek technology that that has people kind of scratching their heads. You know, similar to the end of Kenobi when Kenobi was not on Tatooine and Reva got to Luke. Spoilers if you haven't seen Tatooine, or Kenobi. But, you know, people were wondering like, okay, Kenobi, where is Kenobi in relation to the galaxy? And how did he get back to Tatooine so fast that he was able to stop Reva from, killing or hurting little Luke? So it's interesting. Does hyperspace travel bother you as much as some other people?
Not really. They've tried to do a good job explaining a lot of that. And it was really well explored in the High Republic when they started really talking about the hyperspace lanes and what they were. So I think it's been done well. And I mean, even in Rise of Skywalker, when they do the light speed jumping, they're just getting up to a certain amount of speed in an instant. And then they turn it off and they're somewhere new. It's not a plotted course. So, even in Star Wars, they even talk about, you know, hey, it's not like dusting crops. You know, you'd come out too close to an asteroid or whatnot. You know, you actually had to put some thought into it, and the computer was there to the NAVA computer to help navigate through the different channels of space. So, it doesn't really bother me as much. It's not as realistic as Star Trek, and that's okay. They don't have to be, but at least they've tried to explain it.
Sure, yeah. And that brings me to the question that I was going to ask you regarding Star Trek. Is there a piece of technology in Star Trek that you wish was in Star Wars? What do you think?
Ooh. Well, I'm not as well versed in Star Trek, so I'm going to have to go with an obvious one here, and what they call that, the transporter bridge.
The transporter, yeah, the transporting device,
I think that would be interesting to see in Star Wars, because every time that you see someone go somewhere, got to get into a shuttle, take the shuttle down, and you know, whereas if they had a transporter bridge, all right, we're going to beam you down, beam you up, whichever, make life a little bit easier.
Sure. And it's probably because Star Wars has more money than Star Trek did, and they were able to show all that stuff. You know the story of how Gene Roddenberry decided to utilize transport, the transport method, right?
No.
Well, they didn't have the money to afford to build a shuttle and do the special effects to show the shuttle going down to a planet. So Gene Roddenberry is like, what's the easiest thing? Let's just make them appear and disappear where we want them to have the story take place. And then we don't have to waste money on building a shuttle and building, you know, a space scenes to have that shuttle go down to the planet. So, you know, like every great piece of technology, it was created out of necessity.
Hey, it works. It
just
works.
Just like penicillin. So I've got one more thing on my list, and you got one more thing too. I was going to ask you, but mine, the Death Star laser, which I think, and if you can remind me, early on we saw the Death Star laser in Star Wars: A New Hope, or Star Wars as us old guys know it by. It was just one beam, and it shot into Alderaan and goodbye Alderaan. But I think later on during the special editions, and then obviously some of the more modern Star Wars movies, there's actually six beams that come out of the radar dish of the Death Star and collectively gather in the center, just floating off of the middle of the radar dish. And then from there, another beam comes and then shoots out. Mm-hmm. That always bothered me, similar to your issue with the lightsaber, where the lights, you know, it's supposed to be a light that keeps on going. Like, what is it that makes it, you know, stop in midair and then come back and fold in on itself? Mm-hmm. I think that's kind of the same instance for me, where, you know, the Death Star laser situation kind of bugs me. Why is the light beam stopping there, and then how does it get the energy to shoot from that center point? So that's an interesting one for me. What about what are your thoughts on that?
I much prefer the original. One laser comes out. It just makes more scientific sense. If you have six lasers and then you shoot a more powerful one to go through to redirect,
it's all wishy washy from there.
Yeah. I could hypothesize all day. I am not Neil deGrasse Tyson, so I guess it could be plausible, but just leave it one. It does the same thing. It just may maybe not look as cool, but it's okay. It's all right.
Yeah, they call it space fantasy for a reason, I guess. So So you had one on your list, and I think I hope I'm not misreading it, but recycling?
Something that just always bugged me about a lot of scenes you see in Star Wars. Is when you get the garbage chute, it just doesn't seem to be as effective as, you know, you have all this technology around you. You have all these cool gadgets and things, yet you still have a trash compactor on this station. Empire, you talk about, you know, oh, before we hit light speed, you know, we're going to we follow Imperial protocol, dump the garbage.
Oh, yeah.
And that's how they get away. And, you know, so even in video games, you have the one with Cal Kestis, not Survivor, the first one, Fallen Order. When that game first opens, he's at a scrapyard scrapping out parts. I don't know. I'm sure resources are thin, but there's got to be a better way to recycle whatever they have. Melt it down and reuse it. If you have beams of light that can clash together, you can do something to help tidy up the environment. You shouldn't need to have, you know, put it into a plasma thing or whatever and just vaporize whatever it is. Melt it down, send it out, reuse it. However, it just for whatever reason, that just kind of is like, all right, in no other movie do you really see, oh, hey, space trash. All right. You know,
that's funny. I never really thought of that. But they established the fact that there's garbage in Star Wars because they're crushing it. They're throwing stuff out. And you're right. The Imperial, I guess for some reason, it's Imperial protocol to throw out your garbage before you go to hyperspace. I don't know what that's all about, but
yeah. Lightens the ship, maybe.
Could be, but there's no weight in space. I don't know.
Go figure.
But yeah, I mean, that's another case for Star Trek. You've got replicators that basically recycle raw material into whatever it is that they want to create. Either it's a part for their hyperdrive or a chocolate sundae. It's all the same. They just rearrange the molecules in a way that they want, and voila, it appears. That's too funny.
I don't know. I was like, man, it's just for whatever reason, it's just something that's just always bugged me. You never see trash in any other movies. They got to have it, but you just never see it.
Well, Star Wars is unique in that aspect, and they were pushing the boundaries there. DJ, before we take off, I want to do a one question sentry mode with you, my friend. And I hope you get this one because if you're still listening, I hope you guys get it too. One question sentry mode. We usually do a five question sentry mode, but I've got a special question for my friend DJ here. And sentry mode is basically five questions I ask my guests. But this was a very important one, and I saved it just for you. DJ, are you ready?
Fire away.
In the early 80s, Return of the Jedi set up shop in Yuma, Arizona. We all know the code name that was used for the production. It was called Blue Harvest. Do you remember what the byline was for that fake movie? This one always stuck in my head because I'm like, that sounds interesting.
I don't remember. My memory isn't what it once was.
Any guess? Any specter? Any trace words or phrases that you might see in your in the splinter of your mind's eye?
I can't think of it. It's like right there. I know it. And as soon as you say it, I'm like, oh, I knew that. But for right now, I cannot say it.
All right. And listeners, if you're chomping at the bit right now, then you know the answer. Good for you. But it was Blue Harvest, Horror Beyond Imagination.
Huh. All right. Yeah. I don't remember that.
Interesting, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah. Fun stuff. As my wife likes to point out, my brain is filled with useless information and none of the important stuff.
And knowing is half the battle.
It is, sure is. Cue the G.I. Joe music. Excellent. DJ, thank you so much for joining me on this edition of the Scare of Scuttlebutt podcast. Why don't you tell the folks where to find you to say hello there?
All right. So, yeah, you can find me at Twitter. Red4Charlie. You can also find me live every Thursday on the YouTubes. Just search for The Exegesis. It's a fandom analysis podcast. So look forward to seeing you in the live chats.
Excellent, excellent, sir. And we are both proud founding members of the Red 5 Network. If you want to check out the rest of the Red 5 family, why don't you head on over to theRed5Network.com or check out the bio link. It can be found at bio.link/red5, the number 5. And until next time, DJ, we'll see you out there in the Twitterverse. This is Ro, that is DJ. And remember, it's always sunny on Scarif, and that's the Scuttlebutt. Hey folks, a quick message to say thanks for coming along this podcast journey. As you know, this April, the Scare of Scuttlebutt podcast is 5 years old, and we want to pick 5 listeners to win some sweet Scare of swag. Star Wars Celebration Chicago back in 2019 gave us an awesome opportunity for Brad and I to start the podcast adventure, which culminated into the starting of the Red 5 Network with friends. Some friends dropped off and we picked up a few new ones throughout the 5 years, but hey, that's life. So in the vein of helping us to celebrate 5 years here at the Scare of Scuttlebutt podcast, I'd like to see how many awesome posts we get and make it easy for you to qualify to win some awesome prizes. Get on social media, tag us, and use the hashtag #Happy5PodcastYears. Tell us when you discovered the podcast or the account and why you stuck around. If you're listening now, we realize your time is valuable, and I try to make these shows worthy of your time and effort to entertain and discuss, just like when we were kids. And I hope we've accomplished that. Again, from the bottom of our hearts, a big thank you from Brad and I and all the co-hosts and guests we've had throughout the 5 years. Remember to grab your sunscreen and your blaster, because it's always sunny on Scarif.
Listener, just a reminder that the podcast you just heard is a proud member of the Red 5 Network family. Red 5 Network offers you a great variety of shows you'll be sure to love. You'll find this podcast along with a whole lot more.
All wings report in.
It's the Red 5 Network.